If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, the podcast that's not too boring, it's not extremely interesting, but it's just interesting enough for your little ears. And with us today is the return of Alex the Great, the Scot. Alex, you've moved to another country. What's happened?
I have. Can you guess where I've moved to?
Czechoslovakia.
From my exciting new backdrop.
Soviet Russia.
Yeah, I need to really make this my own. But yeah, that's on you, the commenters. Decide what should I include back here? This is up to you.
This is going to be superb for people who are listening on audio.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
But what should you include behind you in your new Scottish abode?
To describe it for people, there is nothing there except for a beige lamp.
Is that like a? Oh, it's a lamp. I thought it was like a what's it called? A paper shredder.
Well, that'd be a bit ominous, wouldn't it? Nothing behind me except one single paper shredder. But yeah, no, I've just recently moved up to Scotland, to Edinburgh. So I'm here now. And that's why, that's not why I wasn't in last week. Chris was taking my place as planned, and he did a very good job.
Wonderful job. It was great to have him from the Super Show podcast.
Exactly.
Yes, thank you, Chris. Thank you again.
If you're not subscribed to the Super Show, go and subscribe. They are one of my favorite podcasts. I'm a huge supporter of theirs. I'm on Patreon, so
so am I. So
yeah,
there we go.
Are you Robin? Let's call you out.
What? What?
So Alex, you're settling in well into Wee Bonnie Scotland, and you haven't been abused for being English yet.
No, I've been pretending to be Scottish while I'm up here.
Sounds good.
I have been getting some dirty looks, though, for my accent.
They probably think you're like, I don't know where they think you're from, like maybe Poland? Or
I think that man's got a mental health problem. Have you heard the way he talks? It's a bit odd. Eh?
No, I've been avoiding everyone so far. I'm a bit scared of them.
Wow, no, okay.
I'm joking.
Yeah.
And Robin, have you had a week full of trepidation and scaredness, or have you had an enjoyable week?
Oh, sorry, I was trying to think. Do you think I'm in Edinburgh too? Is that no? I'm not.
No.
Wait, what? No. Yeah, my week's been great. Thank you. It's been dull. Then just another dull lockdown week.
That's the thing, isn't it? We come here every week and we say, oh, what have you been up to? And it's like, yeah, the same. Seen anything good on TV? That's boring, though, isn't it? Yeah, a bit boring.
A bit dull at the moment.
Yeah.
I did, actually. Highlight of the week, I watched Colour Out of Space the other day. It's been a while since I watched Nicolas Cage in a film. Been even longer since I saw Nicolas Cage in a new film. And you know what? It was actually a great film, and Nicolas Cage was good in it. It was one of those things where Nicolas Cage crazy performance was the right performance.
It was at the level that was required.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But tonight, in honour of Alex's move to Edinburgh, I have brought a little whiskey, a dram, to toast his settling in.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you.
I've missed out here. I've gone for a beer, but anyway.
No, just pretend it's a large whiskey. Just...
Okay. It's giant whiskey.
What have you gone for, Robin?
This is Lagavulin. What have you got?
Fancy.
You've outclassed me there. Fine. Whatever.
Yeah.
I've got some monkey shoulder.
Still very nice.
Oh,
still very nice.
Yeah, and quite fancy too. I mean, not.
Yeah.
No expense spared. You know, that's good.
It's kind of like stuff. A nice, casual, cozy yeah. whiskey.
Indeed, indeed.
I've got a very small bottle of whiskey, which I bought from Austria about 3 years ago. And because it was so fancy, all the way from Austria, made in Austria, I still haven't opened it. Sitting there, like, one day it'll be a special enough occasion that I can open it.
Yeah.
You know, it's so small, it'll be one drink, you know.
Yeah. Well, so, that's the joy of whiskey, isn't it? It's not going to suddenly go off, is it? You can keep it there for a number of years and it'll only get better, maybe.
I have about 10 different bottles that are all open at the moment, and it's, most of them have been open for about a decade. So,
yeah, they do last, don't they?
They do last, yeah.
It's hard for me to build up a collection, though, because I just get through them that too quickly. If they're there, I'll have a drink.
Oh,
and that's a bad way.
Dangerous. Now you're in Scotland as well. Yeah. Your availability has only increased. Well, talking of availability, this week we're going to be talking about the availability of vaccines to the world.
Mm.
And kind of jumping off a news story this week where Italy has blocked vaccines from going to Australia because it thinks that Australia doesn't really need or, I guess, deserve them at the moment. So that's what we're going to be talking about a little bit later. We're also going to be discussing our favourite comments of the week, and we're also going to be ending up with a quiz. But before we get onto that, we're going to discuss what we've learned this week. So, Robin, what have you learned this week?
I got very excited by this thing that I learned this week, and it's dinosaurs. Yay! I love dinosaurs. Although, sad thing is, it's about the extinction of the dinosaurs.
Oh,
I'm sorry, guys. Brought them down already. Yeah. But it's cool because, you know, the prevailing scientific theory, I think, is the prevailing one, is that an asteroid or comet, not sure what the difference is, hit the Earth and big climate change thing killed the dinosaurs off about 66 million years ago. Now, the telltale sign of asteroid impact is an element called iridium, which is just not really found on Earth. It is found on Earth, but it's very, very rare. So when you have, in the fossil record, a layer of soil, not soil, but like rock, with high levels of iridium, it always is indicative of asteroid impact. And there is a layer in which all the last dinosaurs, as in the non-avian dinosaurs, the ones that evolved into birds, they survived, obviously, but all the non-avian dinosaurs that went extinct, all in the layer in which they all went extinct, according to the fossil record, there is a high concentration of iridium, which is where this asteroid theory originated from. And then, so that was conceived, I think, in the 1980s. And then in the late 1990s, they discovered this giant 150-mile-wide crater in the Gulf of Mexico, I think, called the Chicxulub Crater. And scientists were saying, That crater's big enough that could be the one that killed the dinosaurs. But it was pure speculation.
Yeah.
Until now, when they've just published the results of a study that began in 2016, where scientists went down underwater, because that's where this crater is, 150 miles wide, and they went down to the bottom of the ocean, scooped up, I think it was something like 3,000 or 30,000 feet of soil samples.
Wow.
Yeah, 3,000 feet of rock from the bottom of the ocean, and started testing it. And they found in one particular place a very, very, very high concentration of iridium.
Iridium, yeah.
Yes. And they calculated, not only does that mean that this impact crater is now like almost certainly the crater where the asteroid landed that killed the dinosaurs, but it also revealed that the deposit of iridium, the way it works, geologically speaking, they said this must have happened within 20 years of the impact, which means that the asteroid made impact with Earth, threw up a cloud of dust from the impact, but also the asteroid itself with all that iridium kind of shattered and filled the atmosphere, creating effectively a nuclear winter around the globe, which led to the death of lots of plant life, which led to the death of lots of herbivorous species, which led to the death of carnivorous species, and basically everything just starved to death. But because things settled within about 20 years of the asteroid impact, it means that they now have evidence to suggest that dinosaurs died out in 2 decades.
Wow, two decades.
Yeah.
Didn't take long at all.
Surprisingly short time. Yeah. That's what blew my mind. I was imagining it took place over a century or two after the asteroid impact. But no, more or less immediately.
Than that. I was imagining hundreds, thousands of years maybe. Like in the grand scheme of things, it's nothing in that time scale.
Wow.
It's 2 decades. And that's incredible work. That's the work that's gone into that study to prove that is insane. Wow.
Exactly. Yeah, you're definitely connecting the dots, aren't you, with that one?
Yeah.
Sure. Sure. That's really interesting. Where did you say this crater was found?
In the Gulf of Mexico.
Gulf of Mexico. Okay.
On the tip of the Yucatan Peninsula.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And it's the Chicxulub crater. Wow. And most of it's underwater, but there's traces of it in what would look like just a line of hills on the land, on the coast. But actually, when you look at it from a satellite, it's clearly a big ring in the ocean and on the land.
I was going to say, would this then become a bit of a hotspot for, I guess, paleontologists and those interested in geology?
I guess so, yeah. I guess there's lots of information to be found by studying the rocks there, because the layers must be evident. Although your chances of finding dinosaur bones probably quite slim.
True, very true. Oh, well, thank you. That was incredibly interesting. I'm kind of surprised I didn't come across that one as well, because that's big news, isn't it? It really is.
It is, actually. I guess the world is distracted at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Alex, can you top that? Because I certainly can't with my fact, but I'm hoping you can.
No, I can't really. I mean, I learned an interesting fact about the FBI and the CIA and their recruitment ideals, shall we say. So I learned this week that they actually recruit heavily from Mormon populations.
No, really?
Ooh, the FBI and
CIA. Have a guess, yeah.
Mormon populations? They're Mormon. I was going to say maybe a lot of like single people with... But they have big families. They don't know Mormons.
Oh. That's the one thing that kind of goes against it, because many people have said like these kind of agencies tend to prefer single income households because there's less baggage.
They want Bruce Wayne, don't they?
Exactly. Yeah. but no, this tends to go against that. But I guess not everyone's going to be, you know, out in the field. You need some grinders, some grindstone workers, back at base.
Office workers. Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah, you want to hazard any more guesses?
Mormons.
Is it to do with the religious side of things? The people of faith like that have stable home life, and therefore...
We all know that's not true.
Sorry, I'm going with the theory behind it. I'm not saying this is true. I'm just saying...
It could be true.
As a secondary effect, you're right. It's the stable home life that's part of it. Basically, in general, they are cheaper to do a security clearance on... because they don't really do, you know, they live a much more dum-da-dum-da-dum kind of lifestyle. That's as best as I can put it.
More standard.
They often speak another language because of their like going off on missionaries and missions and that kind of thing. And they usually live a low-risk lifestyle in general. So they're less likely to be, addicted to narcotics or anything like that. They make for great applicants for the FBI and CIA. So if you're looking to get into the FBI or CIA, Russian spies, first get into the Mormon church and work your way through like that.
Yeah,
that would be my advice.
It's interesting that they're wanting people who are, I can understand them wanting people who are kind of mentally stable. That makes a lot of sense, but to go for people that are quite traditionally quite fairly conservative Christians.
I mean, that makes sense as well. Surely most of these intelligence agencies go for conservatives because it's all about patriotism and protecting your country. So you want people who want to work hard for the nation, right? Right?
I just meant in terms of conservatives, in terms of moral values, people that might not want to lie, perhaps.
Oh, and I see.
Espionage, a lot of it's about creating alternative personas, right?
If they're just working as analysts, they don't have to.
It's different roles on them.
Yeah,
I think that's partly it. Yeah, like how would they rationalize their kind of religious beliefs with what the agency requires them to do? But yeah, I think it would largely be maybe working as translators or analysts, that kind of thing, supplying support to other FBI agents. But yeah, that's what I learned this week.
That's awesome. Thanks, Alex. I did not know that. And yes, you've just given a hint to anyone trying to infiltrate the CIA or FBI.
Now we know.
Well done.
Or just Just to get rid of a bunch of agents. Yeah.
If that ever comes back to bite me, then sorry, FBI. I didn't mean it. Don't do that.
Don't do it. Whatever you're going to do, don't do it. Well, this week I learnt about penguins, everyone's favourite or third favourite animal. And yeah, not second. Penguins can drink salty water.
Can they? Now?
And there is a reason why they can drink salty water and they're not sick everywhere like humans would be if they drank salty water.
Yeah.
And the reason they can do this is because they have this particular gland just above their eye called the supraorbital gland, which filters out salt from the water when they drink it. So it filters out the salt from their bloodstreams, when the blood passes through this particular gland, it filters out the salt, which then either gets sneezed out or released out of their beaks. So that's why penguins can drink salt water.
When you say out from their beaks, is that... Do they cough it out? Is it like phlegm?
That's what I was thinking. That's what I was thinking. I didn't have the exact info.
Sneezed out, or
they can sneeze, or I imagine it's some kind of cough or some exhale of it.
Imagine sneezing out like salt.
Salt, yes. Salt. Sounds incredibly painful.
Yeah, it does. They're just coughing out part grains, crystals of salt. Ugh.
Sure.
You're having fish and chips for dinner. Dad, we've run out of salt again. Don't worry, son.
You're all huddled together, just get a mouthful, a face full of salt, and just coughing out. But yeah, penguins can drink salt water, and that's the reason why. Yeah.
Yeah,
nice. I was thinking when you started that story, like when cyberpunk comes into it and like people are augmenting themselves with things, that would be a cool little cybernetic gland to have. Yeah. But then you mentioned the sneezing thing, and I was like, I don't really want to get rid of it that way.
Yeah,
you probably have a lot of people with like really low salt levels, like passing out and stuff and getting a cramp.
It's also another thing to add to my list of scientific terms, that names for things that are the bleeding obvious. Oh, what's this gland above the eye called? Oh, it's the supraorbital gland.
Yeah.
What does that mean? It means it's above the eye.
Yeah, supraorbital.
like sudden death syndrome. You know.
Yeah.
What happened to him? He died suddenly. Suddenly
just
died.
Sudden death.
Yeah. Bloody scientists.
shall we take a look at some of our favourite comments of the week?
Oh yes,
we shall.
Aquamarine says, I'm glad I'm not the only one thinking this past year feels like we've been living in a simulation and are being set up by our simulation overlords. I'd say, what else could go wrong? But that would just be inviting even more disasters. Love your show. Miss Alex, but Chris was fun too. It does feel a little bit like we might be at the whims of our simulation overlords. Does feel a little bit like that, doesn't it? We don't dare say anything else, just in case they heap more misery on us. Well, hopefully this year will be slightly better, please, overlords.
when you're playing like a game like the SimCity, and you build a big city, you make it amazing and prosperous, and then you're like, oh, I'm bored now, I'm going to destroy it with all like the natural disasters and Godzilla and stuff. It feels like we're in that stage where the scientists have finished their experiment and they're just messing with us now.
I mean, Alex, I don't know if you did you watch last week's episode, because that is literally what Chris said. So what Chris brought to the table.
I'm about halfway through at the moment. I was watching it just before this, trying to catch up.
Great minds think alike, or maybe you are actually Chris.
What?
There is a striking resemblance, actually.
What? I've never seen the two of us in the same room together. So
very true.
Is true.
Yeah. Very
you
true.
Never expect it. You never expect it.
I've got a comment from last week's podcast, which was about how gaming may have saved our mental health during lockdown. I say may have, almost certainly did for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it's from Elaine Christina, who's one of our YouTube members, one of our first YouTube members.
Oh, thanks, Elaine.
Thank you, Elaine. And she says, in regards to gaming, my motor skills are blank. So naturally I can't play anything to save my life. What has helped me in this pandemic were coloring books and the Just Interesting podcast.
Aww.
And she goes even further to say that the WHO should sound a warning about you guys being addictive. I feel the withdrawal effect when the upload to YouTube is sort of late. Yeah, apologies it was slightly late. We're not the most stringent when it comes to scheduling.
Understatement of the year.
But thank you for those incredible words of encouragement. And we're glad you enjoy it, Elaine. Also, which colouring books? I want to know. Recommendations, please.
Can you imagine, just imagine for 1 second, the World Health Organization makes an announcement tomorrow. No. Not about COVID, not about like any other infectious disease, just about a podcast on YouTube.
And colouring books. They're like, colouring books are addictive.
Just interesting syndrome. Just interesting disorder, wouldn't it?
Yeah. That'd be great.
Jid.
Oh, well, syndrome would be better. Jizz.
Oh. T-shirt idea, though. Let's make a note of that. Well, I've got a comment from Peaswad, who says, you guys know Super Show and Just Interesting are my two favorite podcasts. Mix them up. Chris the Dick Man being on the show is great. And as someone who missed last week and wasn't there, I'd be well up for that. Well up for like a full, massive six-man episode. It'd be absolutely chaotic.
I think it'd be great, yeah. Let's do it. It would also be very long.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, right. It would be. We'd have to have some sort of like pass the pen, who gets to speak kind of rule or something.
Pass the pen on Zoom.
I don't know how it would work. Virtual pen. I don't know how the logistics of it would work, but yeah.
We can make it happen. I'm sure it could work.
If they're watching this, guys, this is an invite. So make it happen. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll definitely come up with them on Twitch at some point soon, which we just started. Twitch streaming. We're going to try to do it regularly, but again, I refer you to my previous comment about how we're not the most stringent when it comes to scheduling. So
I'm definitely going to do a live stream this week. So
do it.
That's good.
And I don't know what I'll be playing.
It's twitch.tv/just_interesting.
Yeah.
That's the one. Yeah.
Boom. So do follow us because it does help, and we're trying to build a little bit of a thing over there. So if you wouldn't mind, I mean, we will be playing games, but we'll also be doing some other things too, I imagine, including live streaming us just chatting, talking, maybe doing some extra little bits over there too. Doesn't just have to be games. Let us know what you want us to stream.
We could even do some live podcasts, or I mean, we basically just chat on the podcast anyway. So if we're just chatting, it's like like this whole back and forth that you don't really get with these podcasts. So it's exciting for us, especially getting to interact with you as well in a live setting.
Indeed. Well, from live settings to, I was going to say live vaccines, but I'm not sure the vaccines are live. Let's move on to our main topic of the week. So this week, Italy has blocked the export of 250,000 doses of the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, which were meant to be headed to Australia. And there's this, the EU has this export authorization scheme, which means that any of the EU bloc can decide that if they, if they don't want these vaccinations to be sent outside of the EU, then they can actually, they can choose to block it.
Hmm.
So under this, vaccine suppliers need to gain authorization for exports out of the EU. So on this occasion, Italy have decided that Australia, having a pretty successful quarantine and low levels of cases of coronavirus, doesn't actually need the vaccines right now. They'd be better off staying within the EU. And so they decided to block this. And this has caused, understandably, a little bit of a fractious relationship between Australia and Italy and between the EU and Australia. And so that kind of, I guess that brings us on to a little bit of a broader topic of the distribution of vaccines and how they're being rolled out. A lot of them, of course, going to Western, more economically developed countries, the US, Canada, Britain, and of course, countries within the EU, and not so many to less economically developed countries. And so I guess I wanted to open this up to you guys to ask, how do you think vaccine rollout should go ahead? And do you think that the EU, in this particular case, should have the option of preventing the vaccines, which are created in the EU by AstraZeneca, British, Swedish company, from going elsewhere if they believe that they'd be better suited or better needed within the EU bloc itself.
Was this not an agreement between the company AstraZeneca and AstraZeneca?
AstraZeneca,
I think. Yeah. AstraZeneca, yeah. Don't know why I pronounced it that way.
And it's because you're going Scottish, Alex.
AstraZeneca.
And the EU itself, was this not written into the contract when they ordered, what was it, 300 million
doses?
Right. Yeah.
And in fairness to the EU, it's not like they're being vindictive. Well, this is up for discussion, I guess, whether they're being vindictive here. But there have been like production issues that AstraZeneca reported. They've only provided 40 million.
40 out of 120 million, wasn't it? 130 million that they're expected to produce. Yeah.
So, I mean, it sounds like the EU are kind of within the rights of their contract to decline this, whether that's morally justified, because are they withholding this from other countries? But then in this case, I mean, Australia's very low on cases.
Australia still hasn't exceeded 30,000 cases of COVID, let alone
total.
In total, let alone deaths. Whereas I think in the UK alone, haven't we hit 100,000?
125,000 roughly.
Which is far worse situation.
Death, that is.
Shockingly high, and sadly not reported enough at this point. In our country. So you're right, Alex. I feel the same way. It's kind of like this is one of those scenarios where principles get challenged, because it's nice to think, at least for me, it's nice to think of myself as a very principled person who thinks principles are, in essence, absolute. And absolutism, I think, is not a great way to live your life, but principles are good and they are inherently absolute.
Only a Sith deals in absolutes.
That's why I'm wearing black today. In this situation, it's kind of dickish of Italy to block the export of these vaccines, because, hey, a vaccine's a vaccine. It's clearly designed for a good purpose. And it's not like it's a huge number anyway. It's like 125,000, I think, doses that Australia had bought. Yeah, they've paid for them.
250,000.
So that, they bought them. And they should get them at some point. But at the same time, Italy's got this prior contract with AstraZeneca as members of the EU to have the authority to block them going out to Australia. And Australia, not only as a first world country, but as Martin says, as a country with probably the most, after New Zealand, probably the most successful record of dealing as a Western democracy, Western style democracy, probably the most successful nation of dealing with COVID after New Zealand. And so you think, well, actually, yeah, why do you need especially so many doses of the vaccine when you really have dealt with it quite effectively? It seems a bit selfish of you. And Italy, who's one of the worst affected countries, let's remember, Italy had that horrible outbreak in the northern states at the very beginning of the pandemic. They kind of need the vaccine more than most other countries. I kind of on Italy's side here.
I think the issue comes when we're not talking about Australia, we're talking about the precedent that this sets. When you look at some of the countries, I've got a list up here, maybe I'll put it on screen when we edit this, of how many doses have been administered per 100 people. And there's a list of countries with Israel at the top with 97.47 doses per 100 people. So some of these will be first dose, some of these will be first and second dose. The percentage of the population vaccinated isn't said here, but it gives you an idea of how many doses there are per people.
97.5% of the Israeli population has had a dose.
Might be, some people might have had two doses, so it might be less than that. Yeah. You see what I mean? Right.
Okay, yeah.
Wow, but on average, it's roughly everyone has had a dose, on average. Then you look at the other end of the table, and you have countries such as India, 1.2 people per 100, so 1% roughly. Bangladesh, 2 people. China, 3 or 3.5. And then there's some other ones which are unusual, like Canada's only 5.54, but of course they're maybe dealing with it a little bit better than some other countries. And Italy's at 7.87. So there's this wide range and this wide gulf of how many vaccines have been administered. And I think the worry is that if this sets a precedent of being able to withhold it on, say, moral grounds, then it will be years and years of countries being left in limbo, poor, economically poor, yeah. and vulnerable countries being left in limbo because of these contracts that have been put in place. And that would yeah. be my worry as well. And some of the other countries, so the UK is 31 per 100 people, and the United States is 24. So this is, you know, vastly, vastly greater than a lot of these poorer countries at the bottom. And I think that's
yeah.
what we're going to have to deal with in the upcoming the upcoming months.
Going back to like Australia for a second, I mean, yes, Australia hardly has any cases at all. However, you could make the argument that Australia locked down very hard and their citizens have worked very hard to make it at that point. And now it's kind of like they're being punished by not being given the vaccine or saying, okay, now you're last in the queue for the vaccine.
Because you were successful.
Because you were so successful.
Yeah.
And you sacrificed a lot to get to where you are. Now we're putting you at the back of the queue.
Yeah.
From a saving lives point of view, really they should be if they've been so successful because they have hardly any cases.
Yeah.
You prioritize the countries with the most infections. Mm. But just throwing that out there, isn't it?
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Interesting. Interesting point that we would, in effect, be punishing the most successful countries if we...
I don't know. I know what you're saying, but I think that's a negative way of phrasing something that it seems to be... a way that society has functioned for a very long time, which is, unless you're very extremely right-wing, those with the means help those without, right? In this scenario, the means are healthy people who aren't infected. So Australia has the highest proportion, well, not the highest, but one of the highest proportions of healthy population versus those infected with COVID. So they can help out the rest of the world by delaying their turn with the vaccine. So in a way, I know what you're saying, and I don't disagree with the way that you phrase that, except that that's a negative spin, saying they're being punished for their success. But by the same token, that's how taxes work around the world. In most places, you pay a little bit more in tax, a progressive tax anyway, and I think it's important to stress what is officially termed and recognized as a progressive taxation system has a higher rate of tax on higher incomes. Obviously, the most right-wing people say, oh, you're punishing success, you're stealing money from the wealthy, but most people, I think it's fair to say most people, see that as a progressive thing because it's saying, yeah, they get to pay more of a proportion of their income in tax, but they've also got more left over than everybody else has in their entirety. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, that's an interesting question to pose. And I think it's an interesting principle that clashes with what we were just saying, that it seems completely wrong in principle to withhold a vaccine from anybody.
Yeah.
Because especially if you just swap out Australia with any African country, for instance. But on the flip side, Australia is a wealthy country with a great success rate, so it can keep helping the world recover from the pandemic by waiting to have the vaccine until the end, when the countries that are much harder hit can have the vaccine first, you know, because they need it more.
I think the Australians would definitely argue, the Australian authorities would argue, that when they're in this position of limbo, their economy suffers. Whilst businesses can get back to normal, they've had to be very, very strict on shutting down as soon as there's a small outbreak of cases. Mm-hmm. Whereas they would, I imagine, would argue that countries that have been more reckless for the sake of trying to allow the economy to continue as usual have kind of had their cake and eaten it. They've had the vaccine and they've had businesses open.
Except that argument doesn't quite... Sorry, Alex.
No, I was just going to say, I fully agree with you, Robin, with like the needy countries, like Australia would be in a position as a wealthier country to, you know, forego this and help out those needier countries, put them ahead of them in the queue for this vaccine. Mm. But it's, yeah, like you say, Martin, the countries that are Australia's equivalent, I guess, but have just didn't lock down early and didn't lock down hard and tried to have their cake and eat it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But except I think that argument doesn't quite hold water because, particularly, say, Italy is a great example because they were hit really hard really early on, right at the beginning of the pandemic, and they were hit first. So they didn't have the time. And they actually had one of the harshest lockdowns, if you remember, in the northern states in Italy. Yeah. They had people, there were police patrolling the streets, and people were arrested, not just fined, but arrested for breaking curfew. So actually, proportionally, there's a measure for this. There's an organization. What do they call it? They're measuring the severity of lockdowns, and Italy's up there with how severe their lockdown was. And they did it very early on, but it was still, because they were one of the first Western countries to be hit with the virus, it was still too late. So I think that argument, in theory, sounds good when you're saying, oh, you didn't act swiftly enough, you didn't act sufficiently to prevent an outbreak in your own country. But in Italy's case, they couldn't act quickly enough because the virus was already there. The outbreak was already happening when they started reacting. And they reacted far ahead of the UK. And the UK has done slightly better, arguably, than Italy has.
Not in terms of death rate or in terms of infections.
Okay, I retract that in its entirety. And it wasn't a point of national pride that I was saying that. I was saying that simply because I was remembering how badly affected it was.
Yeah, they were one of the first as well, which also amplifies the kind of the news coverage as well.
But I guess the way they dealt with it meant that over the past year, the UK's numbers have just been going up, whereas Italy's have kind of suppressed a little.
You're right there about that. You're right. It would be easy if it was that kind of dichotomy of just some countries were reckless and bad in other countries and paid the consequences in other countries lockdown and were good, but there are some countries that did everything right and still got hit super hard.
I'd also like to play devil's advocate for a moment and just say, again, Australia, very wealthy country, all the benefits of science and technology and economic powerhousing that we do in Europe, why not have the rule of, if you can develop your own vaccine like Israel done, by all means go ahead and administer it first to your people before giving it to anyone else in the world. But if you're not going to bother to develop your own vaccine, Australia, then you deserve to wait at the back of the queue. There's so many ways you can look at this scenario.
Exactly. But I guess, of course, you say that Australia are a very well-developed and wealthy country, which is very true. But what line does, what pecking order do you not have to then develop your own vaccine? Where are we getting down to before we start offering help? I think that's one of the issues, isn't it? Who gets the vaccine? Countries in South America, are they wealthy enough to develop their own vaccine? Or are they waiting? Africa?
Do you think the unfortunate thing is that with a lot of these countries, it's not just that they're at the bottom of the queue, but because they're purchasing these vaccines, that ultimately they're going to have to rely on charitable donations to get vaccine supply to their entire population? Mm. And, will other governments around the world actually help in that way? Mm. To make sure everyone on the planet has this vaccine? Or
what do you think about the British Prime Minister's so-called pledge to give all the spare doses that our government has purchased to the countries that we normally send international aid to? Is that a reasonable thing to do? Is that a generous act? Or is that, the least we could do?
Spare kind of I'm not sure how that's going to work out. I haven't read that article. I haven't seen that news story yet, but
it's not much of a story. He literally said it. Oh, okay. That was it. Data to back it up.
It might depend how they work that out. I feel like, does that mean they're going to sit on this surplus of vaccines until everyone in the UK is vaccinated and then be like, okay, we don't need these anymore, you take them, kind of thing? Or is that they're going to work it out from the supply that they already have and then distribute it that way? Because I feel like the second way would be, that's great. Whereas kind of hoarding an excess until everything's sorted over here, sounds a bit dodgy.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think they... I think it was something he said in the press event, but there has been no details revealed, which... So it could be an off-the-cuff remark, to be honest, with our Prime Minister.
And they say that they're donating them for free. Is that the idea? Or that they're just offering them?
The word he used was give, I think.
Give.
So that implies free. But yes, good question. I don't know.
How
it would actually work, yeah.
There have been issues, I think, with South Africa in particular, where they were paying a higher fee for the, I think it was the AstraZeneca one, than the EU was. They're paying a couple of dollars more per vaccine. So there's also the issue of price gouging here, isn't there? Or was it the AstraZeneca? It might not have been the AstraZeneca, actually. I don't want to get that wrong. But there are different prices for different countries, and that is also a massive issue when we're talking about the equality of the distribution of the vaccine.
Does that price, I don't know what the price difference is. Is it reasonable considering that getting the vaccine from the manufacturing points in Northern Europe to South Africa is, you know, is it just the postage
packaging
costs? You know, is that all there is?
Something to be said there, isn't there? But you wouldn't expect, I think it's, it was... $5.25 as opposed to $3.03 in the European Union. So that's quite a big difference.
$2 extra per vaccine. So if you work it out, so if that's like a million,
that does sound quite a lot actually.
If they ordered a million vaccines, that's $2 million extra for shipping costs.
I mean, it's not a huge amount of money, let's be honest. Even with the population as big as South Africa's, it's not a huge amount extra. But you know, when we're talking about the potential for having different rates for different countries, it could become an issue when we're discussing it being shipped across to a lot of the less developed countries for sure.
Mm. Yeah, it sounds potentially huge, potentially scandalous. When they're making those kind of profits. But then the argument would be that these are private businesses who've innovated and worked really hard, therefore need to make the profit somehow. So,
It's such a tough one when you ask the question of how, in an ideal world, the vaccine would be rolled out. I mean, every country should just be supplied with... the amount at an equal rate, I guess. But because it's companies and companies within certain countries that have made this and they want to sell them and make a profit, that ideal way of distributing it across the world just is never going to happen.
Well, the World Health Organization have come out and said that it should be given to everyone who's at risk and vulnerable within all countries. It shouldn't be that the wealthiest countries in the world vaccinate the whole populations before others have a chance to vaccinate their most vulnerable. But of course, that's not how this is happening. We can see that countries across Western Europe and the US are going to be vaccinated by the end of 2021, whereas other countries outside of Europe but are still fairly rich. So we're talking about like North African countries and some countries in South America are going to be kind of mid-2022. Mm. And then, of course, some of the less economically developed countries across most of Africa. And also, I think, in Kazakhstan and India as well, and Indonesia are going to be as late as 2023. So it just shows this real divide, really a rich and poor divide in how this is being administered.
But this is inevitable, right?
It is inevitable, but...
Yeah. I'm not saying inevitable in a good way. I mean, it's the system we have is that these vaccines are all developed by private companies in the economically developed world where the facilities exist to make these things. So you can't avoid a situation where the wealthy countries will get the vaccine first. And then it's purely a question of whether the governments of those countries will prioritize their own citizens over the others, which in fairness to any country, a government's duty, I think it's a long established precedent that a government's function is to protect its people. So
Australia should accept their, should fight tooth and nail for their vaccines.
Yeah, I mean, I think it, for once, it's a protectionist attitude that I can sympathize with, because it is a government's duty to protect their citizens. Obviously, the irony here is that we've got places like the UK. I think the UK is the third on the rankings of percentage of population that have been given a dose. Yet, at the same time, clearly, after America, one of the worst in terms of actually acting responsibly during the pandemic itself to protect its citizens. Mm. There's an irony there, of course, whereas Australia has acted very well to protect its citizens and yet is having to wait for the vaccine. So I don't know. I think you can argue it both ways. You can say each government with the means to protect its citizens by purchasing and administering vaccines is acting properly, as a government should, at the same time as acting selfishly. Except you could also argue that even if it's not the government's decision, in a true democracy, they should respond to what the people want. We haven't in the UK had a vote or a referendum to suggest whether we want to give other countries, poorer countries, the vaccine before we get it.
Do you know what? Let's not. I would just lose faith in humanity.
I was going to say, imagine if we did have a vote, the effect would be pretty disheartening. We would want to look after ourselves first, in which case, even if the government said to the people, hey, we want to look after these other countries first, we're going to forego our primary function to protect our people, to protect our neighbours first. Their secondary function is to act according to the will of the people. If the will of the people said, 52% in favour of vaccinating ourselves first, then they would be obliged to do that, right? So I don't know. What do you think, firstly, about that scenario, but also on a microcosmic level, such as beyond which country should get it first, which members of society should get the vaccine first?
I mean, the seriously vulnerable and at-risk people should probably get it first.
Like the Scots.
Like the Scots, yeah. I'm fully in favour of all the... anyone currently a resident of Scotland should just be given the vaccine instantly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, vulnerable, at-risk people should be offered it first, I think.
Okay. With the parameters of at-risk being what exactly? Because in the UK, it's been more or less arranged by age. The oldest people have got it first, and then
kind of.
There are certain criteria that kind of. Yeah. It started off as being just the very elderly, and then I think by that was like tiers. Well, they did in tiers, didn't they? So 80 plus, 70 plus, 60 plus, or whatever. And then I think it got down to like tier 3 or 4. Then it was like people who can be considered extremely vulnerable. So people have chronic health conditions that threaten or reduce their immune system. Mm. Mm-hmm. And then it goes, yeah, then it's gone down to lower risk people that still have health conditions. And then, of course, people that are younger as well, which I think is probably the right way to do it. And I imagine there's people that have done copious studies into the most effective way of actually protecting our society, ultimately with the goal of just being to reduce the overall number of deaths as much as possible. Yeah. And in doing so, not overburden the health system as well. That's been like one of the key things in this country, especially because with so many cuts over the last 15 years to our health system, when we are really not in a position to have people just in hospital, even if they're not going to die, just taking up the beds, to be honest.
What about frontline workers or people who, even if they are the youngest members of society, belong to a grouping of society such as an ethnic minority, where their living circumstances mean that they are most likely to spread the virus or just come into contact with the virus, even if they're not a frontline worker? Those people?
Yeah, I mean, this is what you were saying, Martin. Like, I'm sure copious studies have been done into this, but this is something that I've wondered, like, genuinely, what if instead of like the pecking order being like working through like the oldest members of society down, you work from like the most likely people to be in a position to spread the virus, like frontline workers, like people in whose living circumstances mean that they're likely to spread the virus more. I'm not saying that would be a good idea. I feel like that might help stop the spread of the virus, but maybe wouldn't prioritize lives saved.
That's true. Although I guess ultimately, if the spread stops, then lives are more likely to be saved. But it's difficult to know here which way around is best for that. I think it's why there's been recent petitions to have all teachers vaccinated in this country, especially because they are surrounded by kids all day and are vulnerable to catching the virus. So,
I was. You reminded me. There was a conversation I had with somebody who has a friend who is an NHS disaster manager.
What does that mean? It sounds horrible.
So they plan for situations like this where they're employed by the NHS to come up with strategies to deal with terrible disasters of all kinds. But obviously they've been very busy in the UK. I said NHS. For our non-UK viewers, that's the National Health Service. They've been very busy in the last year planning for how to deal with the pandemic. And this person, this disaster planner, told their friend, who I was speaking to recently, that even with the vaccine in the UK, which they expect to be a fairly successful rollout to pretty much every adult in the UK by the summertime of 2021, the NHS's position for disaster management is for people to continue to observe social distancing and to wear masks in public, at least in enclosed spaces, until at least late 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason being that the NHS, as you touched upon, Martin, is currently, hospitals are full of people who are suffering from the long-term effects of having contracted COVID. You've got people who are on ventilators 6 months after they went into hospital. Wow. People who aren't on ventilators but who are dealing with pneumonia or other problems, complications related to COVID. Even though COVID has now left their system, they've got chronic, in some cases terminal, mm-hmm. Health conditions which can only be treated by remaining in hospital. So just the risk of people contracting COVID, even if the vaccine is administered successfully, is not going to be a 100% success rate.
No, of course.
We're already seeing the data. It's having a drastic positive effect on the spread of COVID, but it's not eradicating the virus. According to the NHS disaster planners, at least, it seems that they really want people to continue observing pandemic behaviours, anti-COVID behaviours, well until the end of 2022 at the earliest, just because the hospitals are going to be full for the next year or so with people suffering these long-term conditions, and they need to use that space until these people have passed on or recovered.
That is a huge bummer.
It makes a lot of sense with the new variants flying around as well, doesn't it? Like, we don't know for sure how successful the vaccine's going to be if the virus continues to mutate. The research suggests that it probably will still be pretty effective. And of course, they're creating and updating the vaccines. I know going into the autumn, they're updating the vaccine to kind of adapt to the changes that we've seen in the virus itself, the different variants that we've witnessed. Mm. But of course, by reducing the spread, we'll hopefully reduce the kind of the ability for the virus to mutate. And so there'll be a chance for the vaccines to actually be more successful in the longer term by just, taking the necessary precautions.
Yeah.
Let's hope so.
I feel like the messaging, like, I didn't even know that the NHS had said that.
Well, they haven't. That's the thing. It's a private conversation.
Oh, right. Okay.
That I've reported.
But I feel like, the messaging of that, people are expecting things to be open in the summer. And they're like, I've, anecdotally heard people being like, oh, summer's going to be mental. Yeah. Once this is all, they're expecting the summer, this is all going to blow away. And that's just not going to be the case.
Yeah. It's not going to be as sudden. It's not going to, it's not going to be, the gates aren't going to suddenly open. Everything will be fine. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Wow. So where do we actually stand? We've talked about the possibilities. I think each of us has played devil's advocate at some point during this conversation. But where do we, going back to the original story about Italy blocking the export of vaccines to Australia, first question, do we agree with Italy? Second question, do we agree with the principle of blocking the vaccine going out to another country to serve your own citizens first? Quickfire, Alex, question one.
No to the second point.
Okay.
The, like, obstructing, like, anything to go to other countries just in principle. As a blanket statement, I would say I disagree with that. But this example with Australia and Italy, it sounds like this is a issue with AstraZeneca and the contract that they made with the EU. Mm. And that, like, it's a pre-existing contract that they're now trying to fulfill with Australia, but they've, like, a later order, but they already have a commitment to the EU's order. So it kind of feels like it's more of a contractual issue that they have. So I'm kind of, yeah, on the side of Italy and the EU in this case, even though it feels bad because I'm not normally pro, like, protectionist stances. But I kind of sympathize with it in this case.
An exception that proves the rule, perhaps. What about you, Martin?
Probably no to both. No to both. Okay. Yeah, I think in principle and in practice, it seems a bit ridiculous. If you've signed that contract, I understand that you're contractually obliged to block that, but it's obviously the agreement's been made there, and they should uphold their side of the deal. And then also, when we talk about the kind of the moral side of it, I do think that Australia's been one of the countries that's dealt with this the best. Their cases have been low, and that they shouldn't necessarily be punished for, for acting responsibly, not just at the beginning of this and having kind of the fortuitous nature of the virus reaching them later on, but even when they've had all the information, they've continued to act responsibly when other countries like the UK have had a year to sort their shit out, to put preventions in place, and still time and time again haven't. And so, I'm Australia's side of this one.
Oh, wow. You're the decider, Robin. You get to decide.
So much pressure now. I am caught between the two of you, because I think if you look at it on a case-by-case example, it seems completely unfair to block it to Australia, because, for example, the UK is getting all the vaccines at once, but has done so badly otherwise in managing this crisis. It seems completely unfair, except I am a firm believer in the principle of the national health system we have, in that healthcare should be free at the point of need. And right now the UK needs the vaccine because we've handled things so badly, whereas Australia doesn't, because it's handled things really well. So I think I'm with Alex. I think I oppose the principle of blocking it. And it's a scary precedent. It's a very scary precedent. But as is the case with many actual, like, legal cases that reach the Supreme Court in most countries, there's some specific circumstance that means this precedent is significant, because I think I agree with Alex. Like, the conditions of the contracts that the EU, Italy as a member of the EU, made with AstraZeneca, mean that it's perfectly within its rights to do it, and it's not a deliberately dickish move. It's just a kind of, we need to do this because of the terms of the contract.
But where does it end, though? Where does it end?
Where does it end? Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Like, I would hope this precedent, this doesn't establish a precedent for human behaviours going forward in the negative, just that people can point to this and say, the specific scenario that Italy was in means that they could do that and be in the right. But under other circumstances, they would be in the wrong.
Oh, this is a great debate, though, because we genuinely have, like, differing opinions. And I'm not even sure where I stand on it.
That's the thing. I can certainly see the points you're making. And I do understand. But I'm just worried that this will set that marker down of, okay, well, if we don't want X, Y, and Z country to have it, and they've actually agreed and bought these vaccinations, then we can just pull the rug from underneath them, regardless of how well they're doing. Because Australia could be in a completely different situation. It just so happens that they're doing well. But what if Italy, what if Australia, had an outbreak? As we know, it doesn't take long at all. It takes a matter of weeks, if not months, to go from having a handful of cases, maybe single digits, to having hundreds of deaths. We saw that in the UK. If that happened to Australia, these vaccines have been pulled from them. They don't have any stockpile. They're up Schitt's Creek.
That's a great point, Martin. And I think not to be wrapping this up with a downer, but I have a worrying feeling that your worries are legitimate, and we're going to see this in the future. Very near future,
This has not been humanity's finest hour. I think history will look badly on the world, and particularly the Western world, and how things have been done during this whole pandemic.
Justifiably so. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one question, though, that has occurred to me, and I'm ashamed it's only occurred to me just now, but where's Greenland in all this? Nobody ever talked about Greenland. How are they doing?
So, has Trump bought Greenland yet? Or...
Well, they're part of Denmark, aren't they?
So, yeah,
so that's the ridiculous thing.
I bring it up because, you know, when I play Plague Incorporated, Greenland's always the one that I can't get. No. They're always the one that's stymieing me. Yeah. So, you know.
No surprise, though.
Well,
no
they've had zero cases out of the last week.
There we go.
All right, there you go.
Three cheers for Greenland.
No vaccines required. In fact, charge them $25 for each dose.
Okay. You know. In total, they've had 30 cases and 30 recoveries. No deaths. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, that's like 90% of the population. So quick, get them the vaccine. Every vaccine they need, every dose for free. Send it over.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Just FedEx it. Just,
send it over there.
Just be a small parcel.
From small parcels to big quizzes, would you guys like it's only 10 questions as usual, but would you like a quiz?
Yeah. I
bloody love a quiz.
Ten questions as always, and a bonus question if we're tired, but we'll do it anyway. So, fingers on your buzzers. What have you gone for this week, Alex?
I have, in honour of my return, I've gone for my classic, my usual.
I see.
French champagne has always been celebrated for its excellence.
You know, it's important. It's symbolic of the podcast, and I think we need to remind people every now and then that it's there.
You've moved country, but your heart is still with.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Just Interesting Podcast.
Exactly.
Yeah. Fantastic. And Robin, what have you gone for?
In honor of Alex's emigration to foreign shores.
Have you ever been to Scotland, Dad?
Once. What was it like? I remember it much as one recalls a dream. Or a nightmare.
So yes.
That's like a 20-second buzzer.
I know. I've got the whole scene, so I'll just play through the whole thing.
It is really good. That's from Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, yes, it is.
An amazing show.
3, 4, I don't know. But yeah, a 6-episode season of pure gold.
It is very good.
Thoroughly recommended to anybody who hasn't seen it. Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
Yeah, no, do watch it. It's fantastic. Okay. Amazing. Question number one. Which hormone is known as the love hormone?
French champagne has always been
Alex.
Oh, I don't know. Dopamine.
Interesting.
It's not dopamine.
Oh.
Right. Well, Alex, I think we're done. pheromones are a thing, but are they a hormone?
It's not pheromone. It? No, it's a particular hormone.
Okay.
No, not sure.
Can we have a clue?
Okay. The first part of this word is similar to the first part of the word for what we breathe.
French champagne has always been celebrated.
Yes, Alex.
No, this is so wrong. This is just totally wrong. It doesn't even make sense with the clue.
Can
we estrogen?
It's not estrogen.
I was like, estrogen.
Yeah.
Didn't work.
Been to Scotland, Dad?
Oxidmone?
Oxymoan. It's not Oxymoan.
That's the best I can do.
Okay, last one.
French champagne.
Yes, Alex, what are you thinking?
I thought this was a drug, but maybe it's a hormone. Oxycontin?
It's not Oxycontin, but... Okay, shall I give you the answer, this one?
Yeah.
What, sure? Oh, yeah. You have an extra guess though, Robin, don't you?
I'm not going to get it. Okay. Go ahead. Okay. Yeah.
It's oxytocin.
Oh.
Oh, oxytocin. I have heard of that. Yeah. I didn't realize that was a
thing. Yeah, oxytocin is the one. Okay, what? Zero all. Question two. Which Toy Story movie does not feature Bo Peep?
Have you ever been to Scotland, Dad?
Robin's in there quick.
That was Toy Story 3.
It is Toy Story 3, yeah. No Bo Peep. Yeah. In 1 and 2, then has a bit of time off, and then comes back in 4 as a very different kind of character.
Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't seen 4. Is 4 any good?
Yeah, it's all right.
I enjoyed 4. Yeah, I thought it was good. Yeah. Not as good as the first 3 or anything.
No.
Still good. Yeah. Worth a watch. Question number 3. What is the national animal of Scotland? Alex, I think.
Alex got there first.
Yeah.
It is, of course, the fabled unicorn.
It is the unicorn.
It is indeed.
Which is pretty crazy. Like, pretty crazy. But it is.
I love the optimism there. One day. one day they'll see it.
Question number 4. True or false? The YouTube Twitter account has more followers on it than the official Twitter's Twitter account.
Excellence.
Yes, Alex.
I'm going to go for true.
It's true. It's true. YouTube Twitter has more than Twitter on Twitter by about 20 million, which is pretty crazy. Yeah.
I did not know either of them had their own official thing.
Yeah, I think YouTube has makes sense, just over 70 million. I think Twitter's 56 or something like that at the time of recording. Okay. Question number 5. 3-1 to Alex. Blimey. Or
two one.
Please, I'll take 3-1 if you want.
I'm not doing that badly.
Question number 5. What was the name of the purple Teletubby?
What was it like? I remember it much as one recorded dream.
I think I just got rid of my first. Very close though.
Yes. Yes. That was Tinky Winky.
It was Tinky Winky. Good Teletubbies knowledge.
Phew, yeah, Tinky Winky, Dipsy, La La, and Poe.
Well done. Well done. Alex, did you know that one too?
I did.
You
did? Yeah.
There we go. I'm
still haunted by my memories of
they are terrifying.
Of the Teletubbies, yeah.
But good for representation, though. Tinky Winky, clearly gay.
There we go. Good for representation. Yeah. There we go. Question number 6. What is the most popular spirit in Scotland?
Champagne. Ooh, I feel like that's a tricky question.
Celebrated for its excellence.
I'm going to go for the obvious. Is it whiskey? Scotch whiskey?
It's not whiskey.
No. Oh, okay. Okay, what other spirits are there? It's not whiskey. So...
I was on a budget flight to Norway when a storm hit and forced us to ditch in Glasgow Prestwick.
Is it vodka?
It is vodka.
Oh, brilliant.
It is vodka. There we go.
Is it because it's more affordable than whiskey?
I think it's, I don't know. Yeah, probably. And it just goes with more things, doesn't it? I imagine. Although, I'm not really a big vodka drinker.
You don't tend to mix whiskey, but you would mix vodka. So you can get more out of it, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess you can mix both. But you probably drink more of it at a certain time. It's more of a student's drink. You don't really get that many students drinking whiskey.
That is true.
Question number 7, 3-2 to Robin.
Oh, is it? Oh, God.
It is, taking the lead. It is. What is the beast called in Beauty and the Beast?
That's an interesting question. Are we talking about which version? Disney?
We'll go Disney. I think. Just going to double check.
I don't know if I actually mentioned his name.
It's been so long since I've watched that film, and I wasn't like a huge... I didn't grow up on like Disney films or anything, and I didn't watch the Emma Watson version. So this is a lost question on me. I know people will be screaming in the comments.
So I'm on the Wikipedia of Beauty
Belle?
And the Beast.
Is it Belle?
What's her name? Belle, yeah. I'm on the Wikipedia of Beast from Beauty and the Beast, and it's the first word on the Wikipedia page. So
you had your guess, Alex? Because you buzzed in first, right?
Oh, no, I just accidentally tapped it. Oh. Does that count?
I was stranded. And it's so hilly up there, you can't get any signal on your car phone.
The Prince...
The Prince, but it's the Prince something. No, he has a name. So apparently Disney has come to embrace the name, as seen in multiple pieces of merchandise as well as a plaque hung up in 2012. So he was first called this in a video game, in fact. And Disney then gone on to embrace it. Yeah.
No idea.
No, not sure.
No idea.
His name's Prince Adam.
What? That's so lame.
I imagine it's one of those you know or you don't ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Prince Adam.
Wow.
Yeah. Adam the Beast.
Adam the Beast.
Exactly.
They call me Beast.
I mean,
I'm so hairy.
It's French, isn't it? You've got Belle, you've got Maurice, Gaston, and Adam. Yep.
Adam. Should have been Alan. Because at least you can
say Alain.
Is Adam a French name?
I'm pretty sure Adam's not a French name.
I mean, it's biblical, so yeah. It might be used in France. But yes, there are. I don't recall any famous Frenchman called Adam.
Yeah.
Adamus or something.
Like Jean. Jean-Pierre. Jean-Marie. Jean-Philippe.
Jean-Claude.
Yes, Jean-Claude. Claude.
Claude.
Philippe. Pierre. All these other French names.
This great podcast.
I mean, even the candle's called the candle's called Lumière, isn't it? Lumière. And then you've got Adam. So.
What's the duster called? The French maid duster. She's got a name. It's
Because the cup's called Chip.
Yes. Chip. And Mrs. Potts.
Mrs. Potts. Yeah. The clock is called
Cogsworth. He's English, yeah, I guess.
Yes, name like yes, Cogsworth.
Yeah.
Anyway, question number 8, 3-2 still to Robin. In the Zelda franchise, what is the name of the arch nemesis of Link, the main character?
I've got the game and I've
the game, there's plenty of games. Which one have you got?
Breath of the Wild.
Oh, I see.
Nuts. I've never played a Zelda game.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Confession time.
Celebrated for its excellence.
Yes, Alex.
I don't know if this is his arch enemy or what. Is it Ganon?
He is. I'll give you it. Because it's Ganon and Ganondorf. And I believe that one. I spent in the Ocarina of Time, Ganondorf turns into Ganon. So there's like a morphing that goes on there.
I'd say
it's the same character.
I had Ganondorf in mind and written down, but Ganon would do. I imagine we'll have some Zelda fans going, it is Ganon, it's not Ganondorf or whatever. Probably something like that.
You just reminded me about how I know that. It's because of Smash Brothers.
Oh, yes.
And when you select Ganon, it's like, Ganondorf!
Ganondorf, yeah.
That's how I know it.
Three. Oh, wow, that's a close question. Oh, my God.
Tight.
They have been closed recently, haven't they? All the quizzes.
Yeah, we've been.
They really have.
Better. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Question 9. What is the name of MySpace's founder?
French champagne.
I'll accept the first name. Because I don't expect anyone to know the
second. Really?
Yeah.
Are they known by the first name?
Oh my god. What is it?
5, 4, 3.
Steve. From MySpace?
It's not Steve.
Steve.
Damn it, what's his name?
Robin?
Is there something special about his first name?
He's called, it's often known as something from MySpace, and he was everyone's friend automatically on MySpace.
Yeah.
And so it says, you are friends with, boom, and it almost became a meme.
I can see his profile he's turning around. In my head. Yeah.
What's his first name?
Like a stab in the dark.
Yeah.
like literally just his first name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not a special
name. It's not a special name. It's special to him.
It looked bad. It looked like I was going to have to spend the night in Glasgow.
I just had to play that. Tom.
Yes. It's no. Tom from MySpace.
It's actually.
Yeah. Summer in Your Mind. That must be Summer in Your Mind. There must be.
Maybe. I remember people having MySpace. Tom from MySpace. I remember that fact about you, the automatic friend, but yeah. I had no idea.
Can't Tom, well done. Tom from MySpace.
In fairness, my next guess was going to be Ben, so.
The single
syllable. How did I not know that?
Tom that's from amazing. MySpace. Well done. Very
but
good.
But also, like, I just idolized that person's life. Like, didn't he just kind of sold MySpace and then went off to travel the world with his girlfriend and something?
Yeah. Yeah.
So he just became a billionaire, millionaire?
I imagine.
Multi-millionaire.
Multi-million, yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah. Okay, so that is 4-3 to Robin.
Sorry, Alex.
Question 10, but...
Don't apologise, Robin.
But you know, this question...
winning legitimately.
...has 2 points.
Oh.
So there's a chance to snatch victory within this question.
Okay.
Question 10. Which two sporting events are missing here from the modern pentathlon? So the ones I'm giving you are swimming, horse riding, and shooting. What's missing? Swimming, horse riding, and shooting.
The cabin crew suggested we all go out and club it.
Yes.
There was that one of their
Alex.
Oh, damn it.
I'm going to go for pentathlon, archery, and discus. I don't know what pentathlon is.
So you can do horse riding and throw discus. I mean, to be fair, it is very random. So, yeah, I mean, you're horse riding and swimming, aren't you? So, no is the answer to both of those. No.
To both of those?
Oh, neither of those are correct.
Yeah. Cycling?
Should have guessed cycling, shouldn't I? And, I'm an idiot.
To be honest, I thought archery was part of the pentathlon as well, but archery and shooting seems a bit weird. So, what's a running that they would do in the pentathlon? Hurdles and cycling. That's my guess.
Neither of those are correct.
Damn.
Both are wrong. Do you both want one more go?
I mean, I feel like we've narrowed it down, right? Must have.
So what was it? Horse riding?
Horse riding, swimming, shooting.
But not archery, discus,
hurdles.
Or cycling.
Yeah.
I figured it'd be safer on the streets. For the first time ever, I saw the Scotch in their natural habitat. And it wasn't pretty.
So I just buzzed in.
That's fine.
Sprinting? Like a 100-meter sprint? And long jump.
Long jump and 100-meter sprint.
Yeah.
And neither of those are correct.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
I'm going to go...
French...
horse riding, shooting, skiing.
Okay.
And okay. I'm going to go pole vault.
Pole vaults you on your horse.
Oh, that's a good one.
Pole vaults you off your horse.
Yeah.
No, unfortunately not. Okay, so Robin, you were close. You were close with your two running events.
So there is a running event.
There's a running event. But it's for I would have accepted just running. You're almost too specific with it. You went hurdles 100 meters, which are both sprints. It's a longer. It's for 800 meter laps. That's 800 meters is 2 laps. But
wait, did you say 400
lots of 800 meters.
Apparently. Oh my gosh!
It's called a laser run. So you run and then shoot. Run and then shoot.
Gosh. What was the other one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other one's fencing.
Oh.
And I used to
do fencing. Okay, so another martial skill.
That's embarrassing.
Yeah. So there we are. Congratulations.
Right.
Well done on your victory.
Well done, Robin. This is kind of
thank you.
It's kind of
I was ahead.
A sad way of ending the quiz, isn't it? With need of us getting the point.
Well, we can have the bonus question, and one of you is the closest win, so one of you has to be closer. So there's another point on offer here. Okay, the bonus
question. Done, Robin. Congratulations.
Very good.
Thank you, Robin. Very kind. Thank you, Martin, for a good quiz. A challenging quiz.
Probably
the most challenging we've had for a while.
Oh, yeah. There's a few more difficult ones in there, wasn't there?
Yeah, we started and ended on a 0 point.
That's true. That's
question, a good
point. Okay, the bonus question. So a jalapeno has this, on a Scoville scale, is 3,500
okay.
Scoville units, I believe they are. Mm-hmm. The hottest chili in the world is the Carolina Reaper, officially recorded.
Mm.
How many units on the Scoville scale is the Carolina Reaper?
Being loud, but this time I was surrounded. Everywhere I went, it felt like they were watching me. Fish-white flesh puckered by the Highland breeze. Tight eyes peering out for fresh meat. Screechy, boo-soaked voices hollering out for a taxi to take them halfway up the road to the next all-night watering hole. A shatter of glass. A round of applause. A 16-year-old mother of three vomiting in an open sewer.
Have you experienced this, Alex? Is this your experience of Scotland so far?
Well, I can't say it has been, but everyone's in lockdown, aren't they? So
this time.
I haven't really changed. My situation hasn't changed at all, really. I'm just in a different
building.
Different room.
Robin, what are you thinking for this Carolina Reaper? These are the official stats we're talking about here.
Yeah, I'm going to go 10,000.
10,000 scoville units. 10, so a jalapeno is 3,500. Carolina Reaper is 10,000, according to Robin. Alex, any advance on 10,000?
It's always been celebrated for its excellence.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm going to go higher, but I think it's actually much higher. But I'm going to be a dick and be like 15,000, but I think it's going to be like a million or something mad.
Oh, yeah.
Well, go with a million.
Okay, fine. I'll go for 1 million. You've talked me into it.
15,000. No. It's 2.2 million.
Oh, my God.
Units, yeah. A lot.
So it really is a Reaper.
Yeah.
You can't survive eating that, sure.
Well, people do. People eat lots of them in competitions. Yeah.
Mad.
Yeah, I watched a Netflix show where people were eating them.
That's disgusting.
And this guy had... So this is the official one. Official hottest. But this guy had like mixed bred another one, and he called like a devil's reaper or something. It was hotter than the Carolina. Whoa. And people eating like four or five of these just in a row. Yeah.
Why do that?
That's not good.
The pain, the glory.
Surely that just kills your insides. Like your intestines are just dead.
Yeah.
Your body reacts to those things for a reason and in a way that is deadly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Very true. Very true. So there we go. That was this week's quiz. If you want to eat a Carolina Reaper, then good luck to you. Not for me, although I do like hot sauce. I'm a fan of hot sauce, but maybe not that hot.
Hot sauce.
Bravo, Robin. Congratulations. Well earned victory.
A good win.
Thank you, Martin, for another great quiz.
I haven't had a win in so long. I need a win. I need a win now.
Okay. Well, maybe next week, although you might well be the quiz.
You're
master.
Doing the quiz, I think. So, yeah.
You can't lose.
You cannot lose.
It's kind of a win. In the most minor way possible.
There's still all to play for because we're still pretty much neck and neck.
We are, that's
true. In the league table, so it's not going to...
And we're halfway through the season now that we're on episode 50. Episode 50.
That's mad. In 2 episodes' time, we'll have been going for a year's worth of podcasts. In terms of weekly episodes, not a year's worth of minutes. That would be quite an impressive achievement.
Yes, and if you want more of us, then do head on over to our Patreon, patreon.com/justinteresting, to support us for as little as $3 per month. You get 2 extra episodes per week. That's 8 episodes per month for $3. That's the price of an expensive coffee or a really cheap beer.
Plus, you've got an entire year's back catalogue of those episodes that you can watch through as well.
This is very true.
And you get access to our Discord.
Indeed you do. And so feel free to check it out, see what you think. And if you do fancy supporting us, then we'd very much appreciate it. And this week we've been speaking about North Korea, haven't we? Hacking.
Mm. North Korea hacking. Since you talked about North Korea.
$1.3 billion they've been hacking. So we've been speaking about that. And we've also, in Alex's one, what were we talking about in your one, Alex?
I literally can't remember. This was so long ago. It wasn't. It was like a couple of hours ago.
It also involved Australia, I believe.
What did we talk about? Yes, that was it. It was Facebook not reporting news on their platform in Australia and the kind of impact that that's had. It's basically Facebook taking a country hostage. So
indeed. So yeah. So pretty wild. See our thoughts on that in a little more interesting, just interesting. Patreon.com/justinteresting for that. Anyway, thank you very much for watching, and we will see you in a week's time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye for now.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.